Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Negro Please Radio. I'm your host, Chris Allen. How's everybody doing? Glad to be back. As usual, off the top, I want to take the time out to thank each and every last one of you guys for downloading, tuning in, listening. However you take in my podcast, I appreciate it. I know I messed up my normal rhythm. I was like, you know what? I'm going to switch it up. Then it felt weird. But I appreciate you listening. And please tell a friend, enemy, coworker, tell somebody about the podcast. Go, hey, I think you'll like this. It's only 20 minutes. Dude's funny. You either love it or hate it, but check it out. And I appreciate anyone and everyone that shares my podcast with a friend or a loved one or whoever. I appreciate it. Thank you. I guess I'll jump right in. For those who don't know, we have an 8-year-old son whose name is Miles. And I like to talk about the different things that are going on in his life. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small. That's how I got the name Milestones. But and I know it's weird. People might ask, like, why do you say we and it's just you? It's just weird saying I have a son. I'm married. We have a kid. So I just, even though it's my podcast, I say we. You know, it's funny. I asked my wife a while ago. I was like, hey, you want to do a podcast? And she goes, I can't commit to that. That's a big thing to commit to. And I'm like, we're married, which is a huge commitment. And we have a kid, which is an even bigger commitment. But for some reason, doing a podcast is just too much. But I get it. It is a lot. But he's been doing well. You know, he has ADHD, and a lot of the kids that do, they have issues sleeping. And it's tough to get him to stay in his room all night, you know. But I started putting him down for the – Jesus, that sounds terrible. I started putting him in the bed at night, and the way Dad does it is not as nice. I mean, when my wife puts him to bed, it's a parade and rose petals and soft music and, you know. But me, it's just like, all right, bedtime, click, you know, get in there, punch him in the shoulder, and turn the lights off. It's not as – I take that. I'm not that bad. But we go upstairs. We read. He likes to watch a show for a little bit. I'll read while he's doing that. We'll talk about his day and you know, we play on the floor sometime. He's jumping rope. I mean, because he has energy, man, energy. He woke up the other night at 3 a.m. and he was jump roping in his room. Just boom, 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 boom. I was knocked out. My wife heard it and it kept her up. But I have to share in that burden now, man. I was letting her do it for too long. And yeah, it was starting to get to us. So I had to realize I was deficient in that area, and I've assumed those duties. And the last couple of nights, it's been going well. We've added a little bit of melatonin to his nighttime regimen. And he seems to be doing well these last 2 days. He's not getting up at 3 coming in. He's not getting up at 5 and wanting to stay up. He's sleeping till 7:30, close to 8, you know, going into bed by 9:30. And it's ironically, it's a little bit more stressful because I'm just so used to him coming in our room. And when he's been getting these restful nights of sleep, I can't sleep because I'm such a anxiety, worst case scenario, doomsday kind of person. I'm like, is he okay? Wait, you know, did I give him too much melatonin? He had, it said 2. Is he, you know, what's going on? You know, it's just, that's how my mind works, man. I have to tell myself to stop doing that shit. But he's been sleeping well the last couple of days. And he seems to be happy. I even asked him, like, hey, you know, you like Dad putting you down for the night? And he goes, yeah. I thought he was going to hate it. And I noticed it's been our, like, a hard transition for him, but while it might be uncomfortable, I think it's the best thing to do instead of trying to slowly wean him, you know, the other way. I just think sometimes a hard cut is best. You know, it might be tough for 3 or 4 days or whatever, but after those 3-4 days, it's over. So we'll see how it goes. But as of right now, it seems to be going well, and my wife is feeling a lot better. I'm feeling better about it. And more importantly, he is feeling a lot better and a lot more rested. And we really haven't seen issues with him focusing and staying on task and people that have ADHD, it's like if you give them multiple directions, and I'm the same way, they'll do, you know, maybe if you give them three things to do, they'll do two, five, they'll do three, or maybe four, just depending on how severe it is. And one of his biggest things is like, he doesn't really pay attention to where we are when we on our way back home. And he likes to bring a lot of stuff, a backpack. He's got his iPad. He's got a Switch. He's got his Russian letters. He's got his Japanese workbook. He's got notepads. And like, it doesn't matter where we go. He likes to have all that stuff. He likes to have options. And the back of this car will look like a goddamn playroom or a daycare center with all the kids stuff back there. And he won't pay attention that we're close to home. And then we got to wait 5-10 minutes for him to get everything. He gets sidetracked. Something will fall on the floor, on the floorboard, and he'll go down there and see like he dropped another letter from like 2 years ago under there. Then he'll be like, oh, I've been looking for that cue, you know? So then he has to find every quarter penny on the floorboard. So, you know, getting out of the car can be a process, but the last couple of days we've been out, you know, he's paying attention to where we are and he'll go, oh, okay, we're around the corner from the house. He starts packing his stuff up. And when we get home, we can just get out of the car. And I know for some people that doesn't seem like a big deal, but it happens often. He gets out a lot of things. It's very frustrating for him. So he doesn't like to feel like he's being rushed or that he failed at something. And that can trigger a meltdown, you know, or him to really get down on himself. He will over apologize, something that I do as well. Yeah, so that's huge. And I always try to be positive, you know, when he's doing things that we've talked about, any type of coping mechanism or strategy for dealing with his anxiety or his worries. Anytime he uses any of those tools that we've gone over in his workbooks, I always show him praise, fist bumps, you know, all that kind of stuff to make him feel good about his choices and him actually seeing one and two steps ahead and planning ahead and all that kind of stuff, which I know he can do. It's just the things that he's not really into cause the issue. You know, when there's something with games and all that kind of stuff, yeah, he can plan it out to the nth degree. But when it's something that he really doesn't care about, it's just like, meh. You know, there's been many a times I'll come down Saturday morning because he'll get up super early and make his own cereal. And I'll go down there and he'll have the cereal box out. Sometimes the refrigerator door is open, the pantry door is open, and he'll be like, oh, I forgot, you know, because he'll get caught up watching TV and stuff. But the last few days, he's been doing very well. I'm very proud of him. And I actually enjoy putting him to bed, man. That's quality time for us. And actually looking back, I'm kind of upset that I wasn't involved in that more often. I felt like my wife could handle that better than I can. I kind of felt deficient in that area, and I just kind of let her handle it. And that wasn't really fair to her. And I realized what I've been missing out on, you know, these last couple of years. It's not like I never put him down to sleep. Don't get me wrong. It was just that was what my wife typically did. So we feel good about that. So, yeah. Yeah, that was quite a, it wasn't big, but it was a lot. So I appreciate people who actually like hearing about this kind of stuff, you know, dealing with my son, you know, because I get a lot of compliments about him. He's such a cute kid. He's so smart and all this kind of stuff. And he is. But, you know, I always let people know, like, we have a lot of challenges. I don't like to take too much credit. You know, I'm not perfect. We aren't perfect. And sometimes that just scares me. I don't want people to think that I got all my shit together and I don't. Sorry, I'm trying to fix that. I feel like this is on the side, looks kind of shitty. I got to figure out. Maybe I need another light. But anyway, I'm feeling better, man. It's just been a stressful few weeks, man. I'm so glad all this election shit is over. It seems like people are starting to just settle in. Of course, you still got the stragglers. I had a conversation with a buddy of mine I've known since I was probably about 14. You know, white guy, conservative police officer. We played sports together. Good dude, family guy, man. But some people just stuck in their ways. And we just see things the way we see them, man. And just, it's just, it bothers me sometimes just to hear people, especially to be honest, look, I'm going to be honest. To hear a certain demographic of white guys complaining about shit, nobody wants to hear you cry, man. It's just because you're the one that tells everybody else to quit complaining. There's no racism. Women need to stop doing this, complaining about this. You need to work harder. You need to do that. Stereotypes come from somewhere. And then January 6th happened, and then I'm getting text messages like, the media is making all white conservatives look bad. And I'm like, dude, do you want me to feel bad for you? It's just like, I'm a black guy. I've watched Fox News. I know what they do to people that look like me, okay? And for you to tell me that now you're being demonized in the media, what do you really want me to say, man? It sucks, but it's just like, I told you. We've been telling you for a long time. And I try to be a good person, an open-minded person, an empathetic person, man. But I'm done trying to empathize with people who don't empathize with me at all. I can't do it. I'm over it, man. And that's what a lot of y'all need to understand. If a lot of my white conservative friends listen, no one wants to hear you complain, man. It's just like, until you can recognize the plight of other people, no one wants to hear you complain. And guess what? It's not going to start with you. That's the problem. You talk about other people feeling entitled and they think everything revolves around them. You need to really take a look in the mirror, man. You really do. A lot of y'all. You know, now that you're being demonized in the media, you want people to care? I don't get it. That's not how it works, man. You gotta give respect to get it. You gotta give empathy to get it. And I can't do it for a group of people that just don't care about anybody else but themselves. So and the thing is, man, until it's like a sports team, man, until everybody buys in, we're not gonna be as successful as we can be. We can be a good team, but you can't be a great team unless everybody buys in. And I get it. Everybody's not gonna be a superstar. We all have roles to play. Okay. The thing is, there's a lot of people on the bench that want some game time. Everyone's not asking to be the superstar to take all the shots. People want to get on the court and show or on the field and show what they can do. And we keep changing the rules. That's all I'm trying to, that's all basically what people are trying to say. When everybody buys in, things get better. All right. Sport, it's to me, it's so funny how like a lot of this begins with like Kaepernick, right? Sports athlete, sports figure. They don't like hearing these people give their political opinions at all, especially when they don't align with them. But it's so funny to me how, and ironic to me how like people also seem to understand the sports analogies when it comes to this. I just think it's kind of ironic. But you got to talk, man. I was watching the Suns game with my wife last night, and they made a comment. They were like, oh, Chris Paul is always talking. She was like, damn, they put him on blast. And I was like, I know it sounds bad, but talking in sports is great. If anyone plays sports, your coach always tell you, especially if it's a team sport, basketball, whatever, you got to talk. Talk to your teammates when you're on defense. Talk on offense. Talk on defense. Talking on defense is huge. Hey, man, watch your back. Watch out. Hey, come help me out. This guy's trying to cut, you know, watch out for the screen, shit like that. We're helping each other. We play, you know, you see holes that other people don't. Sometimes you might have your back turned to the ball, which you shouldn't, but you did. Hey, man, watch your back. Watch this. Watch your left. Watch the screen. All that kind of stuff. It's same with our society. Hey, man, you see your buddy struggling defensively? If you can't help out. Of course, once people become a liability, you got to pull their ass, but hey. There's nothing wrong with helping your teammate, man. It's only going to make you better, okay? And I understand our society is way more complicated than playing man-to-man defense or just sports in general. But the concept, we have to talk to each other. We have to talk. And the shit will be painful. And I know people are like, damn, you keep talking about this. It's still a problem. It's still a fucking problem. And what's really a problem for me, this shit is hilarious, actually. Fucking ear. I hate these earphones. I'm seeing white conservatives quoting Malcolm X on TikTok. They're playing all these clips of him calling white liberals the worst kind of racist. They're worse than everybody. And it's like they picked out one specific clip and go, see, we told y'all it's white liberals. It's like, dude, my entire life, I've been told that Malcolm X is a racist. I remember I was at work one time reading Malcolm X's autobiography, and I was getting looks. Well, why are you reading him? Why don't you want to read about Frederick Douglass and Malcolm X? Martin Luther King. Malcolm X was a racist. Why would you want to listen to that guy? That shit bothers me. And it's just a prime example of, like, again, it's like sports. The referee usually only sees the reaction to a foul or a dirty play or somebody that's done something that they shouldn't have, right? Somebody trips you or pushes you down court, you retaliate, the ref sees that, boom, you get a technical. Same with Malcolm X. You look at Malcolm X, oh, that guy's racist, man. He grew up in the 1930s and 40s. He was born into a racist society, but you look at him, his reaction to being subjected to racism, and you call him the racist. When you got people calling him niggers, they tie his father to a railroad track and kill them. I would never condone someone being a racist. I don't. That's one thing that bothers me about Malcolm X. He was, to me, yeah, he was a racist. He didn't fuck with white people. But guess what? White people didn't fuck with him. He was all about self-reliance. That's something I struggle. And I love Malcolm X. I love all the things that he said about black people relying on ourselves, defend yourselves, fuck all this, turn the other cheek. I'm all about that. And if you want to roll your eyes or suck your teeth at me saying don't turn the other cheek, you don't turn the other cheek. You don't. America's not built on turning the other cheek. It's about prying a gun out of our dead cold hands. But for some reason, people that look like me have to turn the other cheek. That is not the American way. That is not American. We fight for our shit. But for some reason, we're not allowed to. Overall, America can, but I can't. I can't defend myself the moment I feel fear. You guys saw, I think his name was Eugene Goodman, the Capitol police officer. Man, that dude knew he couldn't shoot at those white people that were rushing him. He knew that. There's no way in the hell a white officer in that situation with that many black people rushing, I mean, they would have got shot 100%. And my buddy, who was also a cop, he brings up, oh, they shot a white woman inside the Capitol. She shouldn't have been in there. Just like y'all try to say Ahmaud Arbery shouldn't have been in that garage or spec house or whatever they were building. You felt justified in that situation to have somebody chase him down with a truck and then shoot him in the street like a fucking animal in broad daylight. And all you can say, well, he probably shouldn't have went in there. Motherfucker, you know good and well that you should not be in the Capitol. It doesn't matter if the door was open. It's not your place to go into. If my neighbor's front door was open, I can't just walk in. His garage door was open. I saw the lawnmower. Yeah, you don't get to just walk in and stroll around. I just don't understand how that just doesn't, I don't know. It's just, it's really selective when it comes to the kind of stuff. But, and you know, my wife bought me this book, White Fragility, and I'm starting to read it. It's cool. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, why the fuck am I reading this? Like, I'm not the one with the issue here. I'm not the white fragile guy. The people who are fragile need to read this shit. It's always on us to get other people's perspective, to understand where they're coming from, to deal with them. And to be honest, I'm sick of it, man. I'm sick of catering to the other people's thoughts and ideology and being quiet about shit. And it doesn't mean I got to talk about it all the time, but I'm done just sitting there nodding my head and listening to people talk bullshit. I'm over it. I can't get away with that. People will let me know, hey, Chris, I ain't like that shit, man. What you said about white men, I don't like that. People let me know that they don't like what they say. What they don't like what I say on my podcast or on stage or just in Facebook in general. But a lot of us, because we're not in the majority, you got to be quiet, man. When you're outnumbered at work or in your neighborhood, You just learn to be quiet, and it's, you know, you learn to deal with it, but it sucks. And over time, you just, I can't do it anymore. And I think we get into that point. And here's the thing, man. The sooner we are all honest with each other, the more free people will feel to actually live their lives the way they want to. I'm pretty sure there are plenty of Black people that would love to, you know, join the Republican Party, or they used to at some point in time. But there's a lot of issues that aren't addressed. They're like, I can't deal with that shit. And I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who identify as conservatives who really don't see eye to eye on a lot of the ideology. And they kind of feel like, I might be more of a liberal person, but I don't want to seem like I'm like this pro-communist socialist, you know, whatever anti-American ideology that you think every liberal subscribes to. The moment we're all honest with each other and we can work through our problems, and people don't feel like that we have to hide certain beliefs because we don't want people in our family or people on the other aisle that, or on the same side of the aisle to think that we're X, Y, and Z, the sooner that we can all just talk all this stuff out, work it out, we can be honest, and you will see a lot of change happen in this country where you know, you won't have Black people afraid to say like, oh, I'm a gun guy, or I don't believe in abortion, or I do believe in strong immigration. Just stuff like that. It's stuff that people would probably like to admit that they would be for, but they don't want to be associated with the other side. You know, it sucks that you have like staunch, hardcore conservative people who are super anti-gay, and it takes for them to have a gay child or someone trans in their immediate family for them to go, oh man, yeah, now I can go to this side. People won't judge me because my son or my daughter or, you know, my child is now out as trans or gay, bisexual, queer, whatever it is. They won't feel like they need some lame ass excuse to be themselves. And to say you support LGBT just because, to me, that's, you should just love and support people just because. You don't have to agree to say, hey man, they're grown. If they want to identify, that's fine. Cool. Move on. I just think the sooner we all talk about this stuff, work out, and I get it, it's not going to be perfect. All right, we're still going to have issues. But this racial issue in our country, the sooner we solve it, the sooner we will start doing even greater things as a nation. And there's a show. That's a show. Oh, let me before I get out of here, I finally got a date to record my album. I'll be at Good Nights in Raleigh, North Carolina, as of right now, April 8th through the 11th. And I'll be middling for Erica Rhodes Thursday through Saturday. And I'm basically gonna have to do half my act one night, half of the act the other night on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I gotta find a way to mix it all up. And then that Sunday, I'll be headlining, and that'll be my main recording. And I don't know what the turnaround time is after that, but I'm pretty excited. I have been working on the set list for a while. I feel like I got the order, and now I just gotta go back through the set list and start tweaking it and booking a shit ton of shows. I think the Southern Hill here will open up soon, and I would like to do a bunch of limited seating shows just to work on the hour. So I'm excited. I got a couple other things cooking. I hope those pan out. We'll see, man. 2021 looks like it could be a good year. So we'll see. Fingers crossed. But there's a show. That's a show. See y'all next week. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Chris Allen Comedy, ALAN. I'm out. Peace.